Hello and welcome to the Approach Angle Podcast, a pitcherless podcast dedicated to teaching you all things baseball analytics. I'm your host, Nate Schwartz, joined as always by Director of Analytics, Kyle Bland. Kyle, how's it going?
It's going great. Nice, cool 80 degree day here in Palm Springs. So got to walk around a little bit. How you doing, Nate?
I'm doing good. I'm enjoying a too warm 80 degree day here in Washington, D.C., but baseball season has kicked off quickly. I know ABS has caught the eye of many. Has anything caught your eye specifically in the first few days of games so far?
Not too much. Just trying to take it all in, enjoying that feeling, the Matrix-like feeling of all of the stats, all of the numbers just washing over me, seeing, you know, nothing really has popped out, but I'm excited to start digging in now that, you know, we'll have some stabilization points for things like bat speed and some of the really sticky stuff soon. And so we can really start to dig into actual analysis.
Yeah. So today we're going to be talking about exit velocity and batted ball metrics. And I kind of wanted to start with this just as a preface that, as we all know, exit velocity is everywhere nowadays. Since most things, since StatCast started in 2015, it's quickly integrated itself into TV broadcasts, social media, and you can find it even in most apps where you're tracking the games, like on your phone. But unlike its pitching counterpart, pitch velocity, exit velocity is not as straightforward. It's used in a variety of stats that obviously display how hard a hitter is hitting the ball, yet they vary in small but massively important ways. So today we're going to really be planning on breaking down all of the ways you might be seeing exit velocity, which of those stats actually matter, and then how to use it to correctly evaluate hitters. So to do that, we're going to be going through seven metrics in total here. We'll start with average exit velocity and why it misleads, then get into max exit velocity as more of that raw power ceiling and 90th percentile EV as kind of the cleaner version of that idea. From there, we'll then get into some of the launch angle and spray angle metrics that we have from air exit velocity, so average exit velocity on line drives and fly balls only. And then we'll round it out with things like barrel rate, pull air percentage, and X Wobbegon. So all of these will hopefully, you know, create a framework for you to understand, you know, who's good in the stats that it counts, how to use them, and to, you know, understand who hitters are when you're looking at all of these numbers that seem very similar but do have differences. So the reason kind of I wanted to do this episode, you know, especially right now this early in the season, is that one of the few things that we're getting people writing articles and talking about in the smallest of sample sizes is exit velocity. And I think a lot of people are either ignoring it entirely or grabbing the kind of complete wrong conclusions 3 days into the season. So we wanted to kind of go through all of the key batted ball metrics that you'll need to know and you'll see and know kind of whether they're legit or not this early in the year. So with that, I wanted to start with my least favorite of the bunch, average exit velocity. So Kyle, when you see average exit velocity out in the wild on a broadcast or kind of reference, what's your kind of gut reaction to that number?
That's going to be extremely biased and skewed by very outlier outcomes. That, like, yeah, it includes everything, which is nice for telling a holistic view of like what a player has done in a season, but as far as like a useful stat, there's not really like there's not a lot of signal to the worst hit balls, because usually they're coming on not fully like committed swings, like a checked swing that goes around and suddenly turns into this dribbler or like a bunt. And I know sometimes places will filter out bunt hits, but like still, you get somewhere like if guys are really fooled, that's not exactly representative of what their capabilities are when they're swinging the bat. It tells you about maybe their approach and their ability to make contact, but it doesn't tell you a lot about what their ability to damage the ball on contact is like.
Yeah, I think when you're looking at average exit velocity, intrinsically, it makes sense. You pull up a leaderboard of the top guys in average exit velocity. You have O'Neill Cruz, Aaron Judge, Jordan Alvarez, Shohei Ohtani. You're like, yeah, that makes sense. Those guys hit the ball the hardest. But it's really in the margins where you see that quality and consistency of contact can get way over or undervalued in a stat that just, you know, takes something that is literally every batted ball that that isn't, you know, worth monitoring. So can you kind of walk us through why, you know, weekly hit balls are not necessarily worth being part of the occasion in an average exit velocity.
Yeah, and I have a perfect topical example. Over the weekend, Eugenio Suarez hit a batted ball that was tracked at 4 miles an hour of exit velocity. If you think about that, let's assume he absolutely mashed the rest of the game. I don't have exactly what he did, but so that's how he started the game. He had three more hypothetical plate appearances. He hammered the ball 100 miles an hour every time. At the end of the day, his average exit velocity is going to be 76, which is, it's still pretty good, but it's not representative kind of who he is. That for things like that, you learn a lot more signal about from the strong hit balls, that there's a higher correlation to like who a hitter is from their best hit balls than from their worst hit balls. That the worst hit balls generally are noise because they're fluky for a variety of reasons. And so what we're trying to do by not looking at all batted balls in the aggregate holistically is, well, which ones, like, we're looking at batted balls that matter, or the ones that matter are the ones that are relevant to us. We should factor out outliers or ones that systematically don't provide signal to telling us who a hitter is or who a pitcher is. That, you know, the same thing of like, if a pitcher is going against O'Neill Cruz and gets hammered for 120 mile an hour exit velocity, like, okay, that tells you that he got hit hard, but that's functionally not very different than if another hitter hit 110 or 105, but it's going to seem like he got hit representatively harder when in fact he just came up against one of the premier bat speed exit velo merchants in the game right now. So there are a lot of things, like a lot of factors that go into these that introduce noise, that noise is going to be included when you average all of the batted balls.
Yeah, and I think it really goes to, you know, that bigger point about, you know, grouping in what actually counts. I think looking at our favorite small sample 2026 stats, if you look at all 204 hitters so far, the second worst average exit velocity is Cal Raleigh. And obviously a lot of that is directly related to he's really struggled so far, but it's not this like very representative thing of like, that's not who he is. We're not going to project him for literally zero homers with the average exit velocity under 80 miles an hour. That's just not who he is. And it says, if anything, he's not making the right contact that you want to see him making. So
I will say, you flip that leaderboard, I'm not, because it confirms my priors, it must be true, but Sal Stewart currently leading the league in average exit velocity at 99.8 miles an hour. That's the only one that is actually true. Everything else is noise.
This is a Sal Stewart podcast. I know we have both gone on extensive media tours talking about him, and his start has been wonderful to watch, really across the board. But in terms of average exit velocity, something that's pretty similar to that is going to be hard hit percentage. So that's measuring the amount of batted balls hit above 95. So this is more of a percentage and not necessarily that average value, but I think it kind of measures the thing that you might be looking for when, you know, you're maybe misappropriating average exit velocity of who's hitting the ball hard consistently. Obviously, good results come from hitting the ball hard, and you really kind of want to show what the potentially upper level possibilities are in a hitter's profile, and average exit velocity might not be the best way to do that.
Yeah, hard hit rate, you know, I was talking about average exit velocity is really dragged down by kind of those outlier poor hits, and hard hit rate is kind of the flip side to that of you're only bucketing and looking at how often they're making really, really good contact. And so it's more useful because hitters' true talent lies closer to the top end of their exit velocity distribution than the bottom end. So by understanding how often they're accessing that power and how often they're getting to those hard hit rate, that hard hit level is very good. And I know 95 miles an hour feels like an arbitrary cutoff. Tom Tango's put out some good research about kind of why MLB has gone with that, why StatCast and Baseball Savant present it that way. And it has to do with kind of like at that point, batted ball results are good. Like you start to get into more like these generally go for hits versus more often than not don't. But it's proven to be a good threshold. It's enough that it's not very rare. So you do get a decent sample size from a lot of hitters. And so it's a good kind of catch all that incorporates every swing, every batted ball, but might be a little bit more useful because you're implementing kind of some structure to those batted balls. And, you know, I'd like to shout out Alexander Chase did an article here at Pitcher List looking into, so Baseball Savant presents hard hit rate per batted ball, but there is also a significant benefit to looking at it per plate appearance. Then you get into not just, well, how hard do these players hit the ball when they make contact, but how good are they at getting those hard hit ability into the game? That are they doing more hard hit balls every time they get to the plate, not just when they're making contact?
Yeah, and I think that's really important, especially now early in the year when you're looking at someone talking about, I know I will get to barrel rate later, but specifically if you're looking at barrel rate per PA or per batted ball event, obviously Aaron Judge is going to do Aaron Judge things, but he has a ridiculously unsustainable 37.5% barrel rate so far this year. He's hit 2 home runs, you know, he's off to the races, but he's also striking out like 30 or 40% of the time too. So you remove those plate appearances from the equation and it's just going to run that number up and not necessarily give you a full kind of evaluation of the, you know, of who he is in his profile so far. So really kind of to wrap up here on average exit velocity, you know, it's definitely a real thing. It's obviously a real number, but it's really answering a question that no one should be asking, and there's better ways to evaluate exit velocity. So now I want to move us on to max exit velocity. So everything so far we've talked about has been kind of on the consistency of quality content. I want to talk about, you know, upper end raw power in max EV. So that's going to be the highest figure that any player has recorded on a batted ball for reference on the baseline here at the major league level. But 109 is the average so far this year. But Kyle, I want to ask you, is max EV, you know, purely the only way to find the ceiling of raw power for any player?
I think it's a great proxy. I don't think we're slated to really get into this, but like, I would say bat speed is probably the best proxy for raw power. Like, how much juice do they have in that bat? Because I don't think we haven't talked about this yet today, but exit velocity is a combination of how fast you swing the bat and how quickly the pitch comes in. That faster pitches get hit harder, assuming you make the same kind of quality of contact. That's just how physics works, that the ball coming in has more kind of energy, and assuming you hit it with the bat, that it has kind of a higher ceiling on how hard it can be hit going off the bat. So I think that's why I think that bat speed is kind of the end all be all, at least of publicly available metrics right now. I think max EV is a really good proxy for that. And for, you know, most of the StatCast era, that's been the flag bearer for that. We only have bat speed for since about the second half of 2023. So for the better part of almost of 10 years, we've had max EV to play with. I think it's interesting to see. I think there are also some interesting kind of derivative ideas you can get from max EV of a guy generally swings the hardest and makes the flushest contact along his average swing angle. So if you know, if he's hitting his max EV, he's probably hitting the ball the flushest, and he's probably swinging along his like ideal swing angle. So you know, you can now kind of back into it from, well, what was the launch angle? Okay, now we know kind of, oh, his swing angle is this because the batted ball coming off of it was as good of contact as he can make. So I think there are a lot of kind of interesting things that you can back into for max EV. But I think there's power potential in the sense of how hard you can hit a ball. Obviously, this is it. Power potential in the sense of how much damage can you do in a way that benefits a baseball team or benefits your ability at the plate, I think is a different story. And we'll kind of get into that a little bit later. but just as a catch-all, and it generally stabilizes very quickly because theoretically, all you need is one swing. If your hardest swing is your first swing, that's max EV is going to be all year. And, you know, it's not likely that that'll happen, but it's, you know, not unheard of that a player will set it kind of in that first week of games.
Yeah, I will say that swing speed's a great call out. I think we'll have an episode on the future on swing speed specifically, so stay tuned for that. But on max EV, it is a results-based stat. It is not as kind of in the weeds, even though you're still looking at, you know, miles per hour here of a batted ball. It is one instance, and that can only tell you so much. And the consistency of swing speed or consistency of quality contact can mean a lot more. But
consistency of quality content is this podcast.
Yes. You know, they get confusing as it all comes you know, quickly once the season starts. But do you find that, you know, even if you're looking at swing speed kind of especially early in the year, do you find that a single batted ball event can completely change the way you view a specific player?
Yeah, and I think it absolutely can. That I didn't know he had that in him. Like it establishes, if not a ceiling, some level that is functionally very close to their ceiling. And especially if it's higher than any other batted ball in their career, that I don't, you know, even if we assume that's the best they can do, that's a notable tier difference in what they've done for the rest of their career. And that's actionable, important information. Mm-hmm. And I'll also say, you know, we're talking about how great swing speed is and we love swing speed, but for non-MLB levels, so if you're looking at college data, if you're looking at minor league data, they don't have that. And so max EV kind of then becomes kind of the de facto best, like, capability of how quickly can he swing the bat. And so I think there's something to be said there. And I think you can, it's a little trickier going from level to level because of ball differences, or in college because of the bat differences, but you can kind of get a sense that if this is a guy's max in the minors, he's probably going to be pretty close to it in the majors. Or if you see a big bump, if you see like that max gets bumped up, that's actionable. I'm usually don't put as much stock into, oh, he hasn't hit or approached his max EV yet this season. That it's more of like, I just need to know he has that club in his bag when he comes to it. And as far as diagnosing whether his power has like meaningfully dropped, there are other stats that are kind of better for that. But I feel like this is something that establishes, like, has your ceiling risen since the last time we saw you, since last season, or what is your ceiling if you're a rookie, kind of thing.
Yeah. One of my favorite examples of using max EV to change an evaluation I had on someone was Dominic Canzone, who was kind of this fourth outfielder type. He came over to Seattle from, I think, Arizona. You know, there wasn't a ton of upside there. Some people were excited about him. He had a 111 max EV, you know, very respectable, slightly above league average. And then last year, early in the season, he drops a 116, a 5 mile an hour difference. And that, you know, raises some eyebrows of like, oh, you know, has he changed an approach? Has he changed his mechanics to unlock something we hadn't seen before? And he had a very great season last year. He only hit 11 home runs in 82 games, but 300 average, 141 WRC plus. And all of a sudden, the projections for this year are a lot more rosier for the full season. And Kyle, to your point earlier, you know, we haven't seen enough games in order for us to declare, oh, you know, someone hasn't hit a certain max EV yet, we should fade them. I think swing speed's a better proxy to find someone who's maybe not 100%. But there were a handful of names I did want to call out on, you know, who's posted a new max EV this year that is definitely worth monitoring. I think the first one is Chase Meidroth. I believe he's up only half a mile an hour from his previous career high, but I believe this came off of that first pitch of the year, Jacob Mizorowski homer that he hit that was just unbelievable to watch. But that's one of those things, oh, this guy with how much power, you know, I'm intrigued. I think another light hitting AL Central middle infielder I'm intrigued in is Angel Martinez. He had been at 107 previously, and he's already hit a ball 110 this year. We'll stay on the same team. Reese Hoskins set a career high max EV the other day, which feels very, I don't know if he's going to get back to his highs that he had in Philly, but sure, why not? You know, guy who's got something to prove is hitting the ball hard. And then the last one I wanted to call out is Kobe Mayo. He hasn't really had, you know, his moment after a hot spring, but he did eclipse 110 after being around 109 previously.
Oh yeah, I was just gonna say, like, yeah, and it's a good, like, kind of sanity check too of, oh, like, he's, especially like Rhys Hoskins is a big one of, like, this is a guy who has been a power hitter in the past, and if he's now establishing kind of new highs, that's extremely telling. That it's a, and it's, you know, I really appreciate, and, you know, if you go to Baseball Savant on their player pages, you can look up max EVs, and they do a lot of color coding, and so you go to Rhys Hoskins, and it's like, oh, that's top 3% of Major League Baseball is where his max EV is at. That's, you know, that's very impressive. That's okay. Power, known power hitter can power hit, but, like, he's still got it. And, you know, if he's given playing time, he has a little bit of a K issue, but, like, this is something that you can see, okay, he's still got that juice in his bat. Like, that hasn't left him. You can squint, and maybe, you know, this is a good power bet for, you know, later rounds or middle infield or a corner infield slot, or maybe in, like, some only leagues. It's really a dice roll that you can feel a lot more comfortable making now.
Yeah, so really kind of to sum up max EV here, it kind of paints that picture of some version of power potential, but you still need a lot of other things to really bring together what, you know, a power profile can do. So coming up next year, we're going to get into 90th percentile exit velocity and what that means after this quick break. And we're back. So now we're going to be getting into 90th percentile exit velocity. So this is taking the top 10% of batted balls and, you know, putting that into one holistic number at the top. So I think this can be kind of considered as the more smarter version of max EV. So why is it, you know, more useful and more smart than max EV?
Yeah, I think it just has to do with sample size. And I mean that in the sense that hitters will have more of them. So when we say 90th percentile exit velocity, what we're meaning is 9 out of 10 batted balls that they hit are going to be less than this. And so there's going to be kind of 10% of batted balls above it. And what that allows is it filters out a lot of those outlier batted balls. So I know we were talking about max EV and how great that is, but if a guy, you know, really lucked into one, just gripped it and ripped it and really got a hold of a grooved meatball, that, you know, he could set a max EV, but that might not be representative of how often he can get to that in game. But 90th percentile EV, that folds in a little bit, you know, the denominator is a little bit larger. You get, you filter out a little bit more of that top end. And so if a guy is consistently hitting the ball hard, this 90th percentile EV will be very hard. And so what this does is it allows you to better compare across players. So if you see, you know, a guy's 90th percentile EV, that they can be the same, even though they have vastly different kind of max exit velocities or average exit velocities because of what their batted ball profile is. And so you can feel a little bit more confident knowing, like, okay, these are broadly comparable in their ability to add this kind of power to the batted balls they see in game, that it's a little bit more of an application stat and less of a ceiling or a potential stat. And that's why I like it that it's a little bit more sustainable, in the sense that it's truer to what their talent is across a season than something like a single observation point stat like max EV is.
Yeah, Jonathan Judge at Baseball Perspective wrote a very, you know, apt description of 90th percentile of EV and what we kind of want out of these power projection stats. And that 90th percentile EV is the distribution of average maximum athletic effort. So when a guy is at his peak, generally around, you know, how is he performing? And I think one of the kind of biggest call outs to see a discrepancy is if you look at 2025, I will reference another Mariner here, which I know Kyle doesn't talk about a lot, but he is a Mariners fan. But Josh Naylor, he recorded a ball at 117.9, which puts him really in that, you know, top, you know, grouping of max EV guys, but his 90th percentile EV is just 104.3. So that really tells you that you can't be dreaming on a 30 or 40 homer season from Josh Naylor. Like, even if it's in there, he doesn't get to that consistently enough to be able to make that a reality. Like, it's in there if things, you know, if he made an approach change or a mechanic change that lets him touch that exit velocity more often, but those numbers don't line up to, you know, what the top end of the majority of his exit velocities are. But I did want to kind of, you know, 90th percentile sounds good. It looks good. Why 90th percentile? Is there a good cutoff for it? Or is there any reason for doing, you know, 80th or 70th or even like, you know, top 50?
I think there's a little bit of artistry that gets into these percentile choices. I know Driveline posted an article back in 2019 about how they were backing into bat speed estimates by looking at the top eighth of a hitter's batted balls. So that would be like an 84th percentile, or an 87th percentile. So that's pretty close to 90th there. I think it's a trade-off between how kind of innate do you want this to be versus how much potential do you want to fold into it. That you'll increase your sample size or you'll filter out noise by reducing that percentile. So the 70th, 75th, 80th, that you're looking kind of deeper into a player's batted ball distribution. And so the guys who are just really consistently hammering the ball are going to fare really well by that. But it might also start to get into, well, a guy, you know, they could have the same thing, but a guy's top end might drop off drastically after that versus another power hitter might kind of have a wider tail that his top 20% contains like more potential or more impact than another guy's top 20%. And I think this 90th percentile strikes a really nice kind of middle ground between telling you how much juice a guy really has in his bat while also making sure that, okay, this is still a representative sample of kind of who he is and how often he can get this kind of power into the game.
Yeah. Do you kind of consider it as a better proxy for game power than a max EV or some of these other stats that we'll get to? Or do you really kind of consider like a barrel rate as more of an overall gold standard when you're looking at kind of what game power might be compared to, you know, potential power?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. You could consider power a bunch of different ways of like, this is a really great tool for, okay, how often does he get just raw speed in the bat into the game? That, yeah, this is a really good one for his ability to drive the baseball, where, you know, we'll get into this later, but you can hit the ball hard, but depending on where you hit it, both on the ground in the air or, you know, pull, center, oppo, those have much different value propositions. And so I think this is a good one for telling you kind of like the raw tools that a player has, like the ability to get the power tool into the game. This is very good. And I think as far as like the ability to drive value from his power in game is a slightly different question that is answered by some of the other stats we're going to get to later.
Yeah, so I did want to kind of call out kind of to that point, Roman Anthony's 2025. And then kind of going back to average exit velocity here, he was fifth among all players with I believe it was a 90 something mile an hour. Yeah, he had a 94.5 average exit velocity, which ranked fifth out of a 400 player sample from 2025. But if you then look at 90th percentile exit velocity, he drops to around 60th. And you can kind of see that in looking across his profile, his hard hit rate. He hits the ball hard consistently, but he doesn't tap into that upper echelon power that we've kind of heard of or really want to see.
Yeah, you can get into like, so for Roman Anthony, he's a guy who has a lot of juice in that bat. He's got a very good, very, very good top end swing speed. 75 miles an hour is good, like very good, if not elite. But, and you know, this is looking at 2025. But he was very middling in squared up rate. So that's basically how often is he transferring that swing speed into exit velocity. And so I think kind of that tracks that if he's hitting, if he swings the bat that hard, even his miss hits are still going to go at a decent clip. That, you know, if he's over it, if he's under it, those batted balls are still going to come out pretty fast because his bat's going pretty fast. But he's not consistently hitting like in the right in the barrel of the bat, and so his ability to consistently like get to his potential isn't quite there. And that's something that, you know, you hope to see going into this season, that okay, maybe he can bring up that squared up rate, maybe he can figure out how to translate that bat speed into more consistent hard contact at the top end.
Yeah, so really, like, kind of how I see this, if you want to be talking about an average exit velocity, you know, I'd be using EV90 if possible. I know it's accessible on Fangraphs, and I know Baseball Savant as well, as a quick way to view that number. I know it's been previously, you had to go into random Google Sheets that you found on Twitter of people calculating it. It's a little bit easier nowadays. So that really kind of wraps up our conversation on just exit velocity specifically. I now want to add in a different aspect to it that is arguably just important to some extent, launch angle, and as we'll get to it, spray angle. But the first stat I want to talk about kind of in this section is air exit velocity. So exit velocity on line drives and fly balls. Why is, you know, to you, Kyle, isolating batted balls in the air so much more important than just that overall holistic number?
I mean, that's where the damage happens, that if you hit a hard ground ball, you'll probably get on base more often, but like you're generally not going to go, you're definitely not going more than two bases unless somebody misplays it, but you're probably only getting one base out of it, versus if you hit a hard hit ball in the air, you're going for extra bases. You might be, you know, taking a nice trot around all four bases. So I think that I've liked, kind of before we have some of these more nuanced metrics, I liked air EV kind of as a decent proxy for game power. It also, there's something to be said for that hitting the ball in the air, most hitters have a swing path that is a slight uppercut. So batted balls in the air are generally going to be ones that they're making kind of more centered contact on the barrel. They're not going to be quite as under or over it. And so it's a little bit more representative of what their best swings look like. So it's a little bit more telling of who the hitter is than something like just raw average exit velocity, like we talked about earlier. Because this is an average stat, but you're filtering out some of those worst batted balls, like, you know, the dribblers that you hit straight into the ground or the pop-ups that go straight up in the air.
Yeah, it's, I know, I'm still kind of debating how it's even possible. It's hard to hit a 4 mile an hour ball like Eugenio Suarez did in the air. That doesn't, you know, that doesn't compute, and a lot, that does filter out a lot of the things, similar to how a 90th percentile exit velocity is filtering out a lot of things. It's just doing it in a different way. But as we talk about, you know, hitting the ball in the air, I know there's a lot of talk oftentimes about a hitter's launch angle, you know, oh, he's got a, you know, 11 degree launch angle. It should be higher. It should be lower. Does that really matter as much as a good air exit velocity? Can a bad approach often lead to a, you know, a launch angle average that looks a lot better than what the true batted balls look like?
Yeah, I think launch angle is it definitely in some factors a function of a batter's swing path. That the, you know, the classic one, you know, for the Statcast time is Vlad Guerrero Jr. That Vladdy is a guy who has a very level swing. He's got, you know, he always had 80 grade power, set at least 70 grade power going through the minors. He's got an incredibly fast bat. He's, you know, elite top end bat speed every year that we've had bat speed, but doesn't have the homer, the power, the ISO metrics that you're thinking when you think of a guy with that kind of just ability to move the bat quickly. And the problem is he generates more ground balls because he has such a level swing. And kind of that's what I'm talking about, of when a guy hits a pitch flush, like right in the center of the bat, it's usually in the plane of their swing angle. And so that's generally going to drive the ball mostly along the plane of their swing angle. And so if you think about a guy like Vladdy, who's got like a 1 degree approach angle, that's going to be, you know, maybe he's lacing balls like right at the infielders or right through the gaps, but like at head level at like within an arm's reach. You know, they're not going in the air. They're not, you know, flirting with the dirt along the outfield fence kind of thing. And so that's something that his bat path does limit his ability to get that launch angle, but you can still know that, like, oh, if he does get a hold of one, he's still going to have very good air exit velo because he's got that juice in his bat. So it is kind of like he's not going to hit many line drives or fly balls, but the ones he hits are likelier to go for homers. And you know, Junior Caminero is kind of another player like this where he has a higher ground ball rate than you'd think. But, you know, as we saw last year, when he hits them in the air, they tend to go for four bases.
Yeah, I think it's really important to know that you find the guys that that when they're hitting the ball and it is getting squared up, that that is turning into damage. Like, you hit the ball hard enough consistently, and even if it's, as you said, like Vladdy, who isn't getting it up in the air as much as someone else might, you know, it's such a good quality contact that results are going to come from it. And that's, I think you can overlook that a lot of times. And I think that happened really early in the Vlad Guerrero discourse of kind of overcorrecting and what his power profile looks like. And obviously he hasn't hit for as many top line homers as some of the raw exit velocities may suggest, but it's something that you can see that it's in there. And when he is making good contact, it's not as volatile as I think people may say it is. And I did just want to call out that Kyle did naturally mention the name of the podcast on the podcast, which I think is just an important barometer as we ease into the Approach Angles life as a pitcherless podcast. But I did want to ask you, in terms of air exit velocity, does the spray angle affect this the performance of this number? As in spray angle referring to, you know, what direction is the batted ball going in the field? Is it pulled up the middle or opposite field?
It's the pull won't materially affect exit velocity on its own, but exit velocity will be higher to the pull side because of the physics of how the bat has to get to a ball to pull it. So your bat has to travel further to get out in front to pull a ball, and that gives, that means it has more distance with which to acquire speed. And so pulled swings are generally going to be from a faster bat speed than a center swing or an oppo swing. So those will generally be higher hit balls to the pull side than center or oppo, just by dint of the swing speeds are going to be different because the bat has more or less distance to travel depending on kind of what spray direction you're looking at.
Yeah, so that makes a lot of sense. I think the physics of why batted balls are hit harder to the pull side, I think once we got the swing speed, for someone who's not as, you know, knows as much physics as they should probably, it made a lot more sense. It's like, oh yeah, obviously, you know, that goes kind of one in the same. I know you had mentioned something about dynamic hard hit percent. A concept that was originally created by Connor Kirkin, as well as it's been written about by Alex Chamberlain. Do you want to kind of explain to the audience what that is?
Yeah, so that's looking at, that's taking this idea of batters tend to hit their hardest batted balls grouped around what their like best swings are. So around their like most comfortable, most optimal attack angle. And so what dynamic hard hit rate was before we had access to bat speed and attack angle, it was basically contextualizing how hard batters hit balls based on the launch angle. That it's, the idea was actually Joey Gallo. If Joey Gallo, it's 100 mile an hour pop-up, that actually tells you a ton of information about how hard Joey Gallo can hit a baseball, because he probably mishit that ball. Like, for a pop-up to happen, you have to be underneath it, and so you're not squaring the ball up. And for that ball to go 100 miles an hour not squared up, you have to really be applying a lot of impact to that batted ball. And so the idea was basically contextualizing that, okay, the best, you know, your most squared up balls are going to be probably around something like a 10 to 12 degree launch angle. And so you're expected to hit the ball, if you hit a ball at that angle, you're, you know, it's expected to be hit harder than something at, you know, a 0 degree angle or a 20, 30 degree angle. And so it was an interesting way to like take launch angle and use it to adjust exit velocity. And Alex Chamberlain took that idea and went a step further with it and folded in, like we were just talking about, spray angle and looking at, you know, like we said, that pulled batted balls are hit harder, opposite batted balls are hit softer. So if a guy, you know, hammers an opposite field batted ball, that actually tells you that a lot about kind of who he is. Or if a guy's hitting pulled batted balls pretty weakly, that also tells you maybe, oh, that's, you know, this is maybe a little bit of a mirage, that his true talent ability to impact the baseball is less than you'd think.
Yeah, I think that it's a really neat concept and a great transition into our discussion up next about barrel rate, which we will do right after this break. And we are back. So now we're going to get into barrel rate. I think of the metrics that we've talked about today, this is one of the ones that kind of has gone the farthest and has been one of the most important in, you know, general baseball analytics of understanding power and finding a stat that is so influential in finding homer power and general overall hitter performance. But I think you see it a lot and get it, hear it mentioned a ton without knowing, you know, what it is specifically. So I'll ask you, Kyle, what is barrel rate specifically at its core?
Yeah, so barrel rate is a, it looks at a selection of batted balls given both launch angle and exit velocity thresholds. And the idea is to look at the most valuable subset of batted balls. And so at, you know, at the top end, they get hit extremely hard, and there's a kind of a very broad launch angle band. Basically, the harder you hit your batted balls, the more leeway you're given for how, like, the angle that you hit them at. Because if you hit a hard hit batted ball at 20 degrees, it's going to go further than maybe if you hit a weaker ball at a more optimal angle. And so that was just the idea behind it, is to subset for the best possible batted ball outcomes. They're all in the air. You can't barrel the ball on a grounder. And they're all above, I believe it's 92 miles an hour. It might be 95. It might be hard hit only.
I think it's 98, actually. It's slightly harder than hard hit balls. Yeah.
Okay. There you go. Yeah. At least 98. You are correct. At least 98 miles an hour. So basically, it's contextualizing hard hit rate with where hard hit balls do the most damage. And these historically have a very high average batting average on contact. They go for hits a lot, and when they go for hits, they've historically gone for extra bases. I know when they, you know, developed the stat and came out with the stat, the slugging on contact was about 1.5. so basically for every barrel that a hitter hit, you can expect them to get about 1.5 bases out of it.
Yeah, it's, you know, if you're getting 1.5 bases on a batted ball, good things are happening. But do you think that kind of the precise nature of what those thresholds are is almost too niche to focus on? Or is it kind of just the perfect combination of all the right things that if you're doing it enough consistently, good things happen?
I think this is the kind of thing that good things will happen to you if you're hitting lots of barrels. I think, you know, we're starting to see a little bit of maybe barrel fatigue. Of, you know, Goodhart's law is once a measure becomes a target, it ceases to be a good measure. That now we're seeing batters know, okay, if you hit barrels, good things happen, that those are very valuable batted balls. And so what we're starting to see is you're starting to get more barrels kind of in the least valuable sections of them. So maybe they're not quite going for 1.5 bases on average. Maybe it's closer to, you know, one base on average, with still with a high batting average. So it's still, you're still going to get hits out of it, but they might not quite be as powerful of hits. And so I think these are still broadly very good things to go for. That barrel rate is a very good stat for overall ability to get value out of your batted balls. I think what they've become now is a little bit, the distribution of what a barrel means has changed slightly across the league. And we see that with all stats. We see that, like, you know, performance on sweepers
when they were introduced was horrific, and now hitters are used to seeing sweepers. Hitters are training for sweepers, and so the results on those are different. It's the same thing now, that hitters are trying to hit barrels and pitchers are trying to avoid barrels. And so we're seeing that the barrels that are hit are a little bit less valuable maybe than they were before, even if the rates that barrels happen is more similar than that.
Yeah, and because it has not been as effective as it once was, I think part of that can also be attributed to defenses in the outfield getting significantly better. I think my proposal to answer that is to either ban the cards or make there be more foul ground. I think that would just be fun. Make them cover more ground, increase offense. But that's a conversation for another day. But as barrel rates, one of the more kind of mainstream evaluation stats, do you think that there's still an edge in using it? Is it still worth using, or would you find kind of other things to go around it where you might, you know, might find more edge cases?
Yeah, I think as far as like readily available, publicly available stats, you know, it's on StatCast, it's on FanGraphs now, that it's easy to pull it up and to kind of validate, make a leaderboard and see, okay, who's the best on this leaderboard? They're probably going to be a list of the best hitters and maybe a guy that you want to pick up on your fantasy team. That I think it's broadly still a very good stat to utilize for getting someone who has the ability to do damage on contact, even if the shape of that damage on contact is a little bit less homer friendly than it has been in the past.
That makes a lot of sense. So now I want to move on to kind of a different stat than everything we've talked about so far. It actually strips out exit velocity in its entirety, pull error percentage. So pull error percentage is just the percentage of batted balls that were pulled in the air. And really my question here is, why is it the one stat that we'll talk about today that doesn't have an exit velocity tied to it?
I think this is the shape of where hitters try to hit the ball, that there's a lot going into it. I think the way I consider pull error percentage is kind of optimizing your swing speed, that if you kind of sell out for pulling the ball in the air, you're going to get the most out of whatever swing speed you bring. If it's, you know, if you swing a fast bat, you're probably going to really do some damage on, you know, the batted balls you get. If you have a slow swing speed, I know we're going to talk about some guys who, you know, are making the best out of a very poor bat speed, and that's still like a great way to kind of make to really just squeeze the tools you have available to you for all of the value that they're worth. I know we've talked before about the importance of hitting batted balls in the air and the importance of hitting pulled balls. And the importance of hitting pulled balls, as we talked about, is generally your swing is going to be faster. So it's going to be your highest capacity to impact the ball. But the other thing about hitting a pulled ball, and of course they all have to be in the air, is the fences are shortest down the lines. And so, you know, generally they're going to be short to the pull side and to the oppo side. But if you're hitting your hardest balls to the pull side, it makes the most sense that those are the ones that are going to be hit for homers by the most players and have that kind of approach accessible to all players, that you can kind of drop a fly ball right in kind of that first or second row down the line. And that's going to be, you know, that might just be easy can of corn out to center field.
Yeah, I mean, the kind of the poster child for pull error percent is Isak Paredes, who he doesn't hit the ball particularly hard. Projections hate him every single year, but he does one thing better than just about anyone, and he hits it into the Crawford boxes in Houston. And, you know, even though the things aren't great, as you kind of mentioned before earlier, Kyle, you know, he's making the most of a profile and really maximizing power over, you know, numbers that, you know, you wouldn't otherwise expect if you were just looking at the data kind of at the grander scale without the spray direction involved. But I wanted to call out some other hitters who are kind of exceptional at pull air. Hunter Goodman is a good one that I don't think I fully considered how good he was at pulling the ball in the air. Obviously, a Colorado hitter with decent exit velocities and good swing speed is, you know, a recipe for success. But he does things in an approachable way where you could see him, you know, realistically getting to 30 or 40 homers without question. I know PCA kind of went above what we were all expecting last year. And he's another guy with good swing speed, but he hits the ball in the air consistently, and that will result in homers. And then, you know, coming up to our third Mariner mention of the podcast, Cal Raleigh, I think I already mentioned him, but that doesn't matter. He 60 home runs is not repeatable. But when you hit the ball in the air as much as he did last year at the exit velocities he did, good things happen. And it's a clear one that you can see. And the last one I want to call out as more of a kind of underrated call out for this year is Ozzie Albies. He doesn't swing the bat particularly hard. And we've already seen him get to some pole side homers already this year. And it's one of those things where it's easy to fade him with all that he's been through, but he's doing a lot of the right things that might be able to make him get the most out of a profile that otherwise wouldn't, would it pan out the way you think, especially at a thin position like second base? But for these guys who are pulling the ball a ton, do they get punished at all in how they're pitched, knowing that they're trying to elevate to their pull side, get out in front of it? Do pitchers kind of know and adjust to that?
Yeah, so launch angle has a very large kind of component that's due to where the pitch is located. It's easier to hit high pitches in the air and low pitches on the ground. And so that's generally a lot of the time why, four-seam fastballs kind of have a pretty high damage on contact rate. Spencer Strider, even when he was getting Cy Youngs, still could get, hit around if people got a hold of it, because that fastball was so fast. And, like we talked about, exit velocity is somewhat of a function of how fast the pitch is. And because it's high in the zone, it's easier for hitters to lift those. So you get kind of that trade-off of, that's where strikes, that's where whiffs happen, but it's also where damaging batted balls in the air happen. Versus you see a guy like Christopher Sanchez, Logan Webb, your sinker ballers, that they're pitching a lot lower in the zone. They're hammering the bottom of it. And, when you factor in their movement, which, fastballs that drop along with batted balls that are low, that are hard to kind of really lift and pull, there is a pretty large component to where the pitches happen affect your ability to hit them. I mean, there's still something to be said for what the batter's swing path is. If you have kind of a good swing tilt and you get to your pull side, you're probably going to be hitting it on your uppercut. And so those are going to be balls in the air and to your pull side. So if you're able to get out in front on, maybe a ball that's pitched inside to you, that might be a way to do it. Some of the interesting things too of, two names that stand out on that list that share a trait in common are Cal Raleigh and Ozzie Albies. And they might seem like literally the opposite kind of batters, but they're both switch hitters. And I think this is really cool that they're two of the high points for pulled air rate, and they're doing it from both sides of the plate. And so I love going and looking at their spray charts, and you'll see this smattering of homers for both of them. Well, much more than a smattering for Raleigh, but that you see kind of these concentrated clumps like right along the foul lines on both sides. And so it is just like, okay, both sides of the plate, like they're able to take this approach and apply it as a lefty and as a righty. And like, as someone who A, is not a professional baseball player, but B, can't even fathom switch hitting, I think it's incredible that they can do something like that. That seems like their ability to execute a game plan from looking at different pitchers from opposite ways it's incredible. It's really cool. So that was just kind of something that I wanted to call out, but that also kind of gives them more resilience against, there's not like a platoon advantage, that it's not like a, pitchers are generally able to locate, maybe this pitch to their arm side, this pitch to their glove side. But if you're a switch hitter, you know how these pitchers, where they're always going to trait into your nitro zone, into a place where, okay, I can lift and pull here. I can lift and pull here. And I know, okay, he's a righty. He's going to leave some pitches in this area because that's how movement location naturally goes. And so I think that there's a lot of really cool work there. Not to take anything away from a lot of the other names we mentioned, but those are just two of the standouts I wanted to call for really cool and unique traits.
Yeah, and I think you kind of brought up an interesting kind of facet to all of this talk here. I know you've talked a lot about swing speed, and that exit velocity at the end of the day is a results-based stat. It is unlike the things you will see under the hood on the pitching side, where pitch movement is directly, you know, what's coming out of the pitcher's hand at that extension, at that release point, and everything else that is fully created in the process to lead to everything else. Exit velocity, however, is so intrinsically based on, you know, decision-making, swing speed, tilt, approach angle, all of these things that, you know, you really have to get, you know, almost one step further under the hood. And on the public side, we're still going through that of evaluating hitters and, you know, trying to understand on our end how it all works. And one of the things on the other side of, oh, these guys need to pull the ball more, are kind of long levered hitters, such as, you know, an Ellie De La Cruz, a James Wood, or a Jordan Walker, where these guys have really long swings. They're really susceptible to low pitches, and pitchers are going to pitch them there because they really struggle to get there. And even though they're hitting the ball ridiculously hard, it is just physically hard for them to consistently launch the ball in the air to the pull side. And that's just kind of who they are as the archetype of a hitter. But you have to go one step lower to understand how all of those hitters get there. It's very easy to point at the pull error rate and say, oh, well, if they just increase this by 10%, they'd be hitting 65 homers. It's not that easy. So really, pull error is kind of the power profile shortcut in a way. You know, you can find guys who are either, you know, unoptimized power potential, might be hitting, you know, should be hitting for more, like a James Wood, like a Jordan Walker, though he's been off to a wonderful start, as I kind of have to mention here, or kind of guys who are over their skis and, you know, get as much power as they possibly can out of their bat. So I want to kind of speed along through this last one that we're going to mention here today, because surprise, surprise, like every single pitchless podcast, we're running a bit long. But I wanted to talk about one kind of all-encompassing stat here. It's awful to try and say out loud. I'm already struggling here. But expected weighted on base average on contact, or xWOBACON, or in the more fun way, xWOBACON. It sounds very intimidating, but, you know, the actual stat's pretty clean compared to what the name suggests.
Yeah, so what this is doing is, we've alluded to it before, that different batted balls have different values, that hitting the ball hard on the ground isn't maybe as valuable as hitting a ball slightly less hard but in the air. And so what xWOBACON does is it gives you the context needed, that it properly values those balls based on, depending on how it's calculated, similar balls with similar exit velocities and launch angles. That it's basically saying, if you hit a ball this hard at this angle, these are generally the results that you see. And it's scaled to the WOBA scale, which translates very well to runs, even if it's maybe not kind of the most intuitive. But if you think of something like X slugging on contact, it's a very, very similar kind of idea, that you're just basically looking at, okay, how many bases are these batted balls expected to be, and then how valuable are those bases? And I mentioned that there are a couple different ways to look at this and consider this. So StatCast, Baseball Savant, the way that they formulate xWOBA on batted balls, so on contact, is they almost exclusively look at batting at exit velocity and launch angle. They do incorporate sprint speed for ground balls, so they kind of know if you're a fast player, you're likelier to beat out a ground ball. But for the most part, for the things that we're talking about, balls in the air, it's exit velocity and launch angle. One of the things that we like to do at Pitcher List is we fold in that spray angle. And so the trade-off is it adds noise, because, like we've talked about, pitchers do control kind of how, like, the direction that a batted ball is hit in, both in terms of launch angle and pull spray and oppo. So it's a little bit noisier, but it tends to tell you kind of a better story about balls hit at the, you know, in this like exact direction. So like to your pull side at this launch angle, this hard, those tend to be, you know, this many bases or fall for hits this often. And so that controls a little bit for, it's very good at telling you, if you do that again, you might get, you're expected to get this. It's a little bit noisier because you're not it's not a given that you'll get a similar kind of suite of pitches to make contact like that. But I like it because it helps control for like, okay, well, you see like expected home run rates that Statcast posts, and it knows like, okay, well, the fence at this park is this far away. But if that's different from your home park, or if that's different from, you know, where you're used to playing, that affects it. If, you know, depending on how good the fielder defense is, also affects it. And so kind of folding in spray angle, folding in all of the other components we've talked about, allows you to really strip away some of that context and get kind of a truer idea of batted balls like this are this valuable.
Yeah, that's, you know, really well said. And I think the spray angle aspect that we integrate into our XWebicon is very important. I did want to say just kind of real quick, if you know, you see the numbers on the WOBA scale, but I believe around 320 is league average-ish. And if you get up into like 350, 360, that's pretty good. And just looking at like a WOBA from last year, Aaron Judge is at a, you know, gaudy 463, because of course he is. But I think it's pretty pertinent to this conversation that this, you know, would strip out the walks and strikeouts to go into just a normal WOBA or a normal XWOBA. How is it unique compared to like a barrel rate that we've already talked about, kind of, you know, in regards to valuing performance as a whole?
That this gives you, it draws from a wider sample because it is valuing all batted balls. And so, you know, this is an average across all your batted balls, but it's not quite average EV because, you know, some of those dribblers are actually likely to go for hits, that if you hit it kind of down the line at a slow angle, that's functionally like a bunt, and you may be able to beat it out before the catcher or the third baseman can get to it and fire it over the first. That's maybe not as predictive, but it is a good kind of idea of provided value, that is expected to go for a hit, even if you're not expected to do it again, kind of thing. And it's a similar thing too of, you get kind of those flares that maybe aren't your best swings, but these are the like kind of Luis Arias, Stephen Kwan hitterish traits, that they're able to get the barrel just enough on the ball, get just enough launch angle. They hit it right over the second baseman and falls in, you know, shallow right field. And those have value, that's generally going to be a single. What if you hit that batted ball consistently? So I think it's a good way to provide it's, how much damage do you get from hitting the baseball? It's not exclusively a power stat, though, like you talked about with, you know, Aaron Judge lapping the field. Power hitters tend to do the best because power drives value. But I think power stats can undersell the value that contact hitters or guys with really good barrel control, who are better at placing the ball kind of where they want it to, where the defenders aren't, that those guys have values too. And so XWobicon kind of claws some of that value back, maybe against the prejudices of exit velocity and bat speed.
And my last question here before we start to wrap up today's episode, how is it, you know, how stable is it? And, you know, is it a direct kind of key to success when you're looking at it year to year, especially, you know, early in the season before some of these other stats start to stabilize?
So I've mentioned a couple sources of noise and variance. You know, where you get pitched to affects launch angle and, you know, spray angle. And so you can't assume that you'll get kind of the same pitches or the same opportunities to hit balls in the air or to your pole side. You know, going forward, you have to kind of assume more of a league average one. So there's a component of that it will be noisy because all batted ball stats are pretty noisy. But for the most part, it's still better than results, even, you know, if you're scaling your results the same way. So it's better at predicting your WOBA on contact for the rest of the season than WOBA on contact is, because you are controlling for a little bit of that additional context of it. It kind of assumes park neutrality. It assumes defense neutrality, which as a hitter is a fair assumption to make. You're going to be playing in a lot of different parks. You're going to be going against a lot of different defenses. So that's a pretty fair assumption. For, you know, on the pitcher side, that's a little less of a fair assumption because you're generally going to have the same defense behind you. But similar idea, you'll be pitching in front of a lot of different parks. So kind of taking some of that context out makes it a little bit more predictive, a little bit more representative of who you are rather than what you've done. So I think that it is generally pretty stable. Yeah.
Well, that is very useful, especially early in the year, as you were kind of you know, chomping at the bit to see all these things stabilize. But to bring all of this together, we've talked about a ton today, you know, seven different batted ball metrics. I hope to everyone listening, especially if you've made it this far, that you can take something out of this in how you look at batted ball metrics and use them in your day-to-day analysis. But Kyle, you know, if you had to give someone kind of just a one sentence guidance of how to think of all these things together, you know, what is it?
Hit the ball hard, then hit it in the air, then pull it hard in the air. That's your good, better, best.
Yeah. I mean, you know, couldn't have said it better myself. It's very, very straightforward at the end of the day. It's just getting there. Baseball's a game of failure. It's not as easy as it looks. And then kind of our final question here is, you know, when do most of these stats stabilize and how can you use them early in the year when you're trying to find an edge before everything else has fully kind of stabilized and everyone's looking at the same stuff?
Yeah, so max EV can stabilize very quickly. You know, it can jump around a little bit because it can be completely changed by one swing of the bat. But you can get an idea, and that's why I like to look at guys who have big jumps, that's kind of more telling. I think there's a lot of noise to that you can see earlier in the season, because if a guy has maybe added bat speed, that's going to be reflected in more of their hits. And, you know, it's likely that they're going to hit for a new kind of career high max exit velocity earlier in the season, just by dint of now their distribution of exit velocities is higher. So that's one that I like, you know, even approaching now, going into like the first real full week of the season, I'll start to take a peek at that and definitely give credence to guys who have already set career highs, like we've talked about a little bit earlier. Barrel rate can stabilize pretty quick. That's probably the next one I would look at as the season goes on. And then you can get into things like your EV, you know, 90th percentile EV, EV50 is always going to be pretty good. Xwobicon generally takes a little bit longer to stabilize, but like I said, that's one of your better predictors of contact value going forward in the rest of the season. So maybe after 2 months, I think that's pretty good. And for, you know, 2 months versus like four for the remainder of the season. So that's about kind of the spectrum of where are we now versus how do the more, you know, value driven stats stabilize going forward.
Well, that is, you know, very informative on how to use all of this that we've talked about today. But that'll do it for this episode of The Approach Angle. You can find Kyle on socials at Blandalytics, and you can find me at _Nate Schwartz. We have a lot of exciting stuff coming up, and we will catch you on the next one.
Thanks, y'all.